Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of The Hello Show. Today, in addition to our regular lineup of David Kendall, that's me, and Dave Lawrence.
Howdy.
We have a special guest on the show. We finally managed to get him on. We've got Grant Hutchinson.
Hello there.
Welcome to the show, Grant.
Well, it's lovely to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you. And you've got a fresh haircut, and I guess that's just for the show, right?
Well, coincidentally, it seems to coincide. It's actually my pre-South by Southwest cut.
Ah, yes.
So you're off to that.
You're heading south.
Lucky.
But I get a haircut every 3 months, whether I need it or not.
Whether you do. Amen. And you're still taking pictures of this. Or you're still logging when you get them.
That's right. Yeah. I can't stop logging that.
Well, this is important information to know.
Well, there was something interesting actually a little while ago because I've been tracking those for I don't know how many years now. Somebody actually sent me a link to a Python script that he wrote, which actually scrapes the date data off that page and then generates an estimate of when I should get my next haircut.
Wow.
I thought it was rather clever, if not slightly stalkish, but I need to find a way to actually integrate that into the web page so it does it dynamically.
Mm. Right. And then you could just get a reminder or something.
Exactly. have it send me a tweet or ping me on my phone or something.
Yeah. Now, I remember you were interviewed for a site that was talking about the Newton, and they kind of, like, gave that a dig. Like, they were trying to make fun of you for logging your haircuts. Do you remember that?
Was that another podcast? Cyrus had interviewed me for some Macworld tech blog, and it was specific to... It was about the Newton, but yeah, I don't remember the dig specifically. I think he thought it was rather curious.
Right.
And actually, it is pretty odd if you really think about it.
I don't judge. I'm judgment-free. No. Well, we're just glad to have you on, Grant. We've been looking forward to this. And we've got you on mainly to talk about the Newton, because we talk about classic Apple stuff. Macintosh, Newton, and you're kind of the go-to guy about this Newton thing. So tell us how you got started with the Newton, how you got involved and so fascinated with it.
Well, that really started back in 93 at the Macworld in Boston. I was attending there with a company I was working with, Image Club Graphics. We were manning a trade show booth there, and one of the other folks with our company, the guy I was working for, he was what we kind of, you know, kindly called Mr. Gadgetometer, and he just had to have, you know, pretty much one of everything that was new that ever came out. And the Newton was one of those things. It was new. It was different. Nobody had seen anything like it before. It obviously hadn't been tested properly, so it was pretty fresh out of the egg at that point, out of the egg freckles. and he picked one up, you know, paid his $1,000 US for it. And I was fortunate enough to be able to sit down and play with it quite a bit over the next few days. And it was just really enamored with, you know, the way it did things. I mean, the interface was super clean. You know, it was, you know, 1-bit display, hearkening a little bit to some of the nice basic interfaces you could build in HyperCard at the time. But just the way you interacted with the data and the way you scrolled and used the stylus, I mean, it was different. Nobody had released anything like that previously, and it just, there was something there that there was some magic to it. I really couldn't see a use for it at that point myself. You know, I was a guy that was pretty much tied to my Mac, for doing my day-to-day stuff. I mean, I still had a day timer, a paper day timer. I wasn't even, you know, keeping track of that kind of stuff using
old
Mac.
School.
Yeah, I mean, I had a custom HyperCard stack that I used for addresses and things like that, and they tied into correspondence that I would write and then print out, and, you know, I could cross-reference stuff that way. So it didn't really hit me that this handheld device could do that kind of stuff yet. It was just a very cool little handheld thing that you could play with, and there was some magical technology behind it that was, you know, really, really interesting. But, you know, beyond that, first kind of, you know, getting to know the Newton, it really didn't hit me as something I, you know, I wanted to use day to day until many years later when I picked up a MessagePad 120 at a really good developer discount. They were clearing, Apple Canada was clearing them out as the 130 models were coming in. So I picked one up at a really good price. Actually, my Flickr stream has a scan of the original receipt for those, you know, interested in the minutiae of the whole thing. And, you know, at that point, I started messing with it as a device that I wanted to integrate into my day-to-day stuff. I started putting my addresses in it. I started using the notes when I went to meetings. And, you know, put on other software, you know, got the Newton Internet Enabler working on it with a modem so I could use it for email. And it eventually, that, you know, that one device kind of led to finding an MP2000 on eBay. And then that, of course, I wanted to get a 2100. And then, of course, at some point I wanted to get an eMate because they just look damn sexy. And it just kind of snowballed from there over the years.
Right. So now you've kind of taken over the reins of a lot of the Newton community projects. What are you currently in charge of?
I think the first one I took over was the Newton community from Stacy Tenen. He was moving apartments years and years ago. I think back in, it was probably 2001. And he just couldn't run the site anymore. At that point, the site was running on a Cobalt Cube Linux box. And he basically mailed the server to me, and I plugged it in up here and kept running it.
And we'll come back to that.
Please do, because there's a lot of there's a lot of history there. and then, you know, I was working with Paul Guyot and Victor Rehorst and a couple other guys on documenting and testing a lot of the Newton personal data sharing, the web server software, and I ended up kind of taking over that site as the admin and doing a redesign on it and organizing the information. You know, the developers on that project have kind of slid away from it. But I'm still maintaining all the source code repositories and the documentation for that. And then after that, I took over Newton Talk when Victor stepped back, which was fine. And that's proved to be a large learning experience as well. Being a listener.
Now, explain what Newton Talk is for those that aren't familiar.
Right, Newton Talk is the granddaddy of all Newton mailing lists, and it's been around. Oh gosh, I think it started up probably back in '98.
Wow.
I can't quite recall if it was actually in existence prior to the Newton getting killed. Because there were some other mailing lists that were supporting. I mean, Apple ran their own mailing lists for Newton support as well. So it's had quite a sordid history, bouncing from provider to provider and list mom to list mom. And eventually it kind of slid into my lap, and I've been running it now for, I think, about 3 years since Victor stepped back. But that's been fun, and it's an interesting, you know, you think about communities revolving around, you know, retro technology or, you know, older computer systems and things like that. And it's interesting to watch how Newton Talk kind of ebbs and flows. I mean, we gained a lot of interest and new members when all the iPad buzz was really, cranking up.
And the tablet talk.
Yeah. And I mean, it's these are people who are genuinely interested in finding out what the heck is this Newton thing that I've never really heard about before this time. I can't believe that Apple was doing something similar, 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah, I imagine that was hugely boosted when John Gruber wrote about it in his article about, I think it was New Year's Eve he wrote it, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was a great article too. I mean, he hit a lot of nails on the head that really needed a good hammer whack. That was an impressive article. I think a lot of people finally got a clue about the Newton.
Right. So now you're kind of seen as this go-to guy for Newton stuff. Like if people have issues with their Newton or they need parts, like you're kind of the go-to guy now.
For the most part, I mean, I like to be able to help when I can. I mean, I certainly have a stockpile of hardware and software and things if people are looking for them. But I've always had a kind of a secret life in customer support with all the companies I've worked with. I really hated doing tech support when I was doing, working on software development and stuff like that. But you always kind of want to be able to help somebody find a solution. So because of my history with all these sites and the history with the platform, I find it really easy to point people in the right direction to find their own answer if I can't readily come up with it right away. But, I mean, that's one aspect of it. And the other aspect is just, having a box full of, spare serial cables and, dongle destroyers and things like that. If somebody's looking for hard-to-find stuff, chances are, if I don't have one, I know where I can find one for.
So how many Newtons do you own right now, Grant?
That's a really good question. I honestly don't know the exact number, but if I had to kind of pull one out of thin air, I'd probably say somewhere around 60.
Wow.
If you include all the prototypes and all the the spare parts models that have been partially taken apart. I have one Newton that I use all the time, and by use I mean it's plugged in and connected to the internet running my Newton web server 24/7. And then I have a handful that I use for testing and transferring data between cards and, hooking up different bits of networking cabling too to see if they work and so on. I used to have one that I just took with me to trade shows and conferences to take notes on. That one's been retired for the time being because I use my MacBook Pro for that kind of stuff now, or my iPod Touch. But what's interesting is I still like being able to make sure that I can transfer the bits and pieces I collect on each one of those things back and forth between them. So I want to be able to make sure that, my notes that I've taken on my Newton, I can still read on my Mac, and the addresses that enter into my Mac, I can transfer to my Newton and so on. So I don't do it on a regular basis, but I'd love to be able to, do proof of concept that it can still happen in this day and age.
Right.
Keep it relevant.
So you talk about syncing with a Mac. What Mac do you sync it with? Do you sync it with your MacBook Pro?
Right, I don't sync it to the MacBook Pro. I've got an older model G4 Tower that still runs Classic, and then I use Simon Bell's sync utility to at least do backups. I really don't sync other than kind of manual pushing, vCard data back and forth. Notes and stuff I share using the web server. Syncing is kind of a black art on the Newton regardless. It always has been. And there is no solution, so I don't try to find one. I just want to make sure that the data is accessible and it's not locked out completely.
Right. Yeah, I found it. I've just about given up on syncing my E-mate with my Snow Leopard iMac. I just can't get it to work. So I figured, you know what? It's probably just not meant to be.
At some point, you just got to step back and say, well, you know, it'd be nice if it happened, but you know, it's okay.
Right.
I can
still play with it.
I can accept it.
Right.
So, and then you have this. You have a whole setup of old Macs, kind of. In a server environment, don't you? In your basement, you posted a photo, an annotated photo to Flickr recently.
Yeah, and that's that rack has there's a G4 in there which I use for backups. All of the laptops in the house here get backed up to that. I got a FireWire RAID, 2 terabyte RAID on there that they all back up to. That G4 also acts as an iTunes server for the house. And then there's two older PowerPC Macs on there. One runs my website and about 40 other domains.
Your website is hosted
FTP.
On that the beige G3.
No, it's actually a 9500.
Wow.
Wow.
That's...
Well, now, it's a dual processor 200 megahertz. Come on. But It runs OS 9.1 and WebStar 4 and a version of Rumpus for FTP. And, plugs along rather nicely. Thank you very much.
Wow.
And then there's a second beige Mac there, which it's an 8500, which runs Mac HTTP. And I also run QuickDNS on that one for as a name server.
So splorp.com, that's how we're seeing it.
Yep. It's
right. That's great.
Yeah.
That's super. So I wrote a little something a couple of months or years ago or something like that about how I just think it's neat how Newton users, even after the platform has been dead for, 11 years now, they continue to use it. And I always wondered, what could replace the Newton for these folks? Would it be an iPhone? Would it be an iPod Touch? You know, what could take the Newton's place? And I remember what you told me. You said, well, you know, nothing, because nothing can ever really replace the Newton. It's got its own personality. Do you want to say a little bit more about that? What keeps this thing so fascinating to people?
From my standpoint, I don't want to stop using the Newton because I enjoy using it as a device. I mean, it doesn't do everything, and some of the stuff it does not very well. But it has an intrinsic, it's got a certain aesthetic. It's got an intrinsic feel to the user interface. I appreciate how clean it is. I appreciate how it handles, data as kind of blobs or in proper terminology, soups. I mean, it just does a lot of things very logically. And, it's instant on. You can take the batteries out. You don't lose your data. I mean, it's a smart thing. And, it's a little slow and it's a little clunky and it won't really fit in any pockets that I know of. you're right. I mean, there's a certain personality and there's a certain underlying charm to it. And some people won't get that, right? It's like some people don't get the iPhone and some people don't get the BlackBerry, right? I don't get the BlackBerry at all. I do get the iPhone and the iPod Touch. And, one of these days when my stupid Bell Canada mobile plan finally runs out and I can swap in this crappy phone I have now for an iPhone... I'll do it because, I mean, I need a phone and I can't take my Newton around and call people on it. But would I totally abandon using a Newton just because I had an iPhone? No, they're different devices and they do different things. And I appreciate them for different reasons.
And so these days you mainly use your Newton as kind of like a project device. You do some testing on it. You play with software, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't use it for any day-to-day stuff. I haven't probably for 4 or 5 years. Like I mentioned before, I used to take a 2100 to trade shows and conferences and things and use it as a note-taking device. And it worked for me. It was great because I was able to transcribe a lot of stuff in a way that if I was just doodling on a scrap of paper, I would still have to transcribe it and actually in order to use it for something or to, you know, to make sense of it and copy and paste it into a blog post down the road or something like that. Right. And being in some sort of digital form on the Newton was better for me. And it actually helped me focus my thoughts because I could only input data at a certain speed on it. So I had, you know, you have to be succinct. It's almost like, you know, taking notes in kind of Twitter mode, right? Because you have to kind of formulate, you know, how much space you got to do something before, you know, the next line kicks in.
You have to be efficient.
You have to be efficient. And I think that helps you formulate and organize your thoughts. So years ago, it really worked for me as specifically a note-taking device. And, you know, obviously I had an address book in it and I used it for referring to other information that I was carrying around with me. But right now it makes total sense because I enjoy the platform and the technology so much. I just enjoy playing with it and, you know, plug in a new card in and see what this does and try this package and, you know, test this, I've got a folder here that I was going through some of my old Newton projects and I found a folder of old bitmap fonts, which I was going to convert into Newton fonts at some point. And I'm going to fire up the Newton toolkit again, and finish those off because I like seeing new stuff being released for this platform, which, you know, for all intents and purposes has been dead for 12 years.
Keep it alive.
The whole note-taking thing. I mean, I think I've said this before. It might not have been on this show or might have been off the air, but I definitely prefer handwriting to typing. Even though I'm incredibly bad at it, I definitely prefer it. I don't know why it is, but I've said it before, and if I could write my blog posts on paper and have them magically go into the computer, then I definitely would do that. But I have tried handwriting recognition systems, and I don't think they're really quite good enough. Not in the sense of, oh god, this thing wrote this catching on and it turned it into egg freckles. Not in that sense, but in the sense that it just, the aesthetic of writing on paper, the feel of the pen across the page, to me, just feels right.
I agree with that. I'm just trying to think, because I carry around a sketchbook as well, but it's not for taking notes, it's more for sketching doodles and ideas and capturing things visually as opposed to text.
Were you surprised that Apple hasn't taken the Newton handwriting technology any further? You know, it hasn't appeared in any of the recent mobile devices?
Not entirely. I just don't know if there's too much need for it. I mean, it's...
Have you ever tried handwriting with your finger, Dave?
Yes, I have, on my iPhone. Yeah. It was awful.
Yeah, it really doesn't work. And, you know, to be honest, I mean, I've got my Newton here. I've got the keyboard connected up to it. I use the keyboard probably more than I do the stylus for inputting any text or, you know, editing HTML and stuff like that. I mean, there's certain things that I can do faster on a keyboard, and other people... I know people who swore by using the ink input on their Newtons. I don't think anybody wants to do that anymore. And you look at some of the tablet PCs and the Windows-based ones, and having used those and seeing how poorly implemented they are and how ineffective they are at transcribing the stuff, most of those people take notes they're doing it like they're doing it on paper. They're never translating that into digital text after they scroll it onto the screen. They just take the notes and then they read their own chicken scratch in a digital format, right? But it's going to be interesting to see if that improves any with a larger form factor on, you know, something like the iPad, because you've actually got some real estate in which to, you know, use your finger. It's so hard to do it. I mean, it's hard enough to do it on the size of a screen of a Newton, but you try to do it on an iPhone, and it's just, there isn't enough real estate there. Unless you're somebody like, I don't know if you guys know Lunatic. He's a Newton user from San Francisco, and he used to be a Newton developer, and I met him at the Newton, the Worldwide Newton Conference in 2006 down in San Francisco, and he's a very fascinating fellow, but he has these very long fingernails. He has kind of a goth aesthetic to him, but his one fingernail, his pointer finger, was actually shaved down into the shape of the tip of a stylus, specifically so he could use his finger on his Newton. And that's the only way I think that's going to work. The whole inkwell technology being applied to something that doesn't require a stylus just doesn't seem right. And I don't think I'm glad that they moved that technology into OS X, but I don't think it's ever going to be useful on those platforms outside of something that was designed to be used with a stylus.
I mean, right. You say they put it in OS X. I mean, they hid it so well that I've tried several times to activate it and try it with the mouse, but I've never been able to find the setting to turn it on. Because they just seem to...
I mean, you know...
I think they've accepted that ink isn't a very good technology to try and... Trying to interpret people's handwriting is not really a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think where something like that is stronger is in the gesture stuff. And, you know, if you've got a device that doesn't support the multi-touch or doesn't have a way of inputting multi-touch gestures, then... implementing some of the simple gestures in the Newton system might be beneficial. I mean, I use gestures quite a bit in conjunction with dashboard on my Newton for doing shortcut launches or filling in information the way like Text Expander does, for example. I mean, it's very useful in that way, but you still have to program it to do a lot of that stuff to so it integrates with the way you want to interact with the device. The stuff that just comes out of the box, there's a certain stumbling block there if you have to learn what somebody else has programmed into it. If you can just go ahead and figure out a way that makes it work for you, then maybe that's the way. And the gesture,
customize it.
Yeah, and right now the gestural stuff isn't intelligent. It doesn't learn it. Right, it has to be pre-programmed in there, or you have to assign a specific gesture to a specific action. So it's interesting to think about how the handwriting recognition and the gesture recognition technology could be implemented in something like the iPad. But Apple's not going down that path. They want to focus on the multi-touch and advancing and streamlining how that gets connected in with the software specifically. They just really tie it in tightly to the software. Mm. It's going to be interesting to see what they do. I think the iPad as a platform is going to blow the doors off of the way a lot of stuff is thought about and created down the road. And maybe there's some stuff that they can learn. The guys that are going to be developing that software, maybe there's something they can learn from the way that Newton implemented that kind of... what might be interesting is being able to port the Einstein project onto a platform like the iPad.
Well, we were discussing this, I think, a couple of weeks ago. But the problem is you need a... emulators are forbidden by Apple. You need the copyright ROM, which is copyright Apple. So it basically would have to be a jailbreak app.
Right. Which would be well worth it, if you ask me.
I would jailbreak my iPhone to get a new app on there. Heck yeah.
You're clearly a lot more hardcore than I am, then.
Oh, what's the worst? What's the worst that could possibly happen? Come on.
We have to buy a new iPhone.
We better not talk about this anymore.
We're
on iTunes. We better be careful how we talk. We get booted.
We'll keep that under our hat. That'll be a side project,
right? Grant, part of the Newton community is like you have to kind of carry the torch for this thing because. You know, you can't buy a new one, and Apple's not supporting it or whatever. And so you had this Newton project, and if you want to talk a little bit about that, and then what the heck happened, what has it been, 2 years now that the big crash happened?
Yeah, that poor old server, it was
the
Cobalt Cube 2, and... We had, you know, Stacy Tannen had originally been running the Newton community site on that, and it cranked along and was eventually got shipped up here, and I ran it again for a few years, and it's one of those situations where you think you have everything backed up, and then something happens, and you apparently don't, and it was an unfortunate. Occurrence, but the hard drive totally died in that poor old cube, and the backups that were being made ended up only being partial backups of some of the static data. None of the dynamic data was saved. A lot of the user data was lost. So basically, it was basically starting from scratch. But since that happened, and you know, we've come to the realization that we can't salvage any of the old data. Been slowly salvaging a lot of the site content out of like the Internet Archive, yeah. Wayback Machine, and some of the backups that I do have, and slowly reassembling what was there. You know, with the exception of the message boards. Which were kind of stale and out of date anyway. There wasn't a lot of valuable information there that couldn't be found elsewhere.
When Jeff Atwood's Coding Horror crashed, I know he used the Web Archive to recover his content. That thing is just, you know, I think you really appreciate what they do when a big crash like that happens.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, one of the things that the Newton community site offered was free or very reasonably priced web and email hosting for people that required it. You know, and Google's taken over some of that with some of their services, but not everybody is keyed into using Google for all their stuff. So that's one thing that I would love to kickstart again is and that's kind of what made the Newton community a community was these people that, you know, they shared an interest and they just needed their little slice of the internet to store their files or, you know, post a blog or, you know, have a specific, you know, non-Hotmail email address kind of thing. And I've started approaching and being contacted by some of the old community members who were still active at the time, you know, at the peak of the community, we probably had, you know, 900 people that were being hosted on there, and not all of them were using the web space, but they were using the email. And there was maybe a couple dozen folks that were, you know, active, high traffic users, specifically of the email. Before the crash happened. So I've been slowly going back and contacting them, and they've been contacting me and trying to get them hooked back in with an account. And what I'm hoping to do is announce something on the Newton Talk list within the next, you know, several weeks that if people are interested in, you know, having their own little spot there again with, you know, POP or IMAP, email, webmail, all those kind of services, but, you know, under a non Gmail, non-Google, non-Microsoft kind of umbrella, then they're welcome to it. And for the most part, the service will still remain free. But if they, you know, if they want extra bandwidth or they want a little more, you know, storage quota for their email account, I mean, they can make a donation and helps me keep the server running and pays off the internet connection and so on. So there'll be some news posted about that very shortly.
Yeah. Great. That's why I signed up, was just to get the email address. I wanted something other than Gmail to do the Newton Poetry stuff, and it wasn't long after I joined that the whole thing went crashing down. So if you need someone to blame, you can blame this guy.
Yeah, I was wondering about the coincidental nature of that.
Guilty as charged. Oi. I'm just curious to get Grant's thought on what the next couple of years in the Newton community looks like. I mean, what do you see happening 10 years down the road?
Oh, 10 years? I can't look that far. I think over the next little bit, what we might find, what I'm hoping is going to come out in the next little while is some more work on getting a native development environment that works under OS X, specifically Snow Leopard. I'm hoping that there'll be some work kind of working out the kinks on how, you know, syncing and backup works with the newer systems. Maybe something a little more platform agnostic that'll work, you know, using web protocols instead of serial protocols. I mean, you know, being able to connect your Newton to a network using TCP is a lot more predictable than trying to do it over serial or infrared or whatever.
Bluetooth.
Yeah. I mean, I want to, I've got about 4 dozen, you know, half started improvements to the Newton personal data sharing code, which will help, you know, it make it easier to import and export, you know, notes and names and things. So you'd actually have web interfaces to your address book and things like that. I need a little help because my, you know, my Newton talk or Newton script programming skills are pretty subpar when it, you know, comes to implementing that kind of stuff. I can kind of take apart other people's code and fix it up and change it a little, but I can't write it from scratch very easily. So there's some stuff there which will, I think, will help with one of the big bugbears about Newton right now, and goes back to, it's always been a problem, is getting the data in and out of there. And that, you know, that's the whole sync. How do you sync my data? How do I import? How do I export? How do I back up? I mean, that's always been a problem. I think we can probably count on Eckhart Köppen to keep improving a lot of the tools he's done and find a solution for the
Newtpocalypse?
The Newtpocalypse bug that, I mean, he fixed one bug, and then we discovered, oh, wait a minute, maybe that wasn't the bug after all. There's another one in there. But if anybody can figure that out, it's him. And I think we're going to see some people starting to play around with the Einstein project as well and see that, you know, there's still a bit of buzz pops up every once in a while about that. And people say, hey, what the heck is this? And I think somebody's going to grab that by the horns and run with it and see what they can do with it.
Yeah.
That's great.
Once the last Newton's popped it, the emulator's all we've got.
Yeah, I don't think the hardware's going anywhere. I mean, you know, based on the amount of units that are still out there, and there's still a lot that have never really been cracked or been used. So, you know, the old hardware eventually kind of craters, but I think it's going to be with us for a while yet.
As long as you have a fresh set of double A's, I think we're good to go.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, you've got some projects. You were just involved in a layer tennis match.
Right, with Kudal Partners.
Right. Mm-hmm. So people can, if anybody knows what the layer tennis deal is, it's pretty cool. They can go to kudal.com, and we can probably put that in the show notes. What else are you involved with now, Grant? How are you keeping yourself busy?
I got a few sideline projects, some nonprofit design work I'm doing for some people. I'm heading down to South by Southwest at the end of this week to hobnob with some web designers and participate in a couple discussions regarding web typography. I don't currently have a full-time day job. I'm kind of juggling a bunch of personal projects and things that I'm interested in right now. And there's a couple other things on the back burner that might see the light of day later in the spring, but that's about all I can say about those. And, you know, slowly going through and, you know, documenting my collection here and maintaining the Newton Talk list and, you know, keeping involved in the community that way.
And keeping your hairs cut.
And keeping my hairs cut.
Okay. So, you have a huge collection of retro technology, Grant.
Yeah, huge is a probably pretty good word.
Yeah. When I first invited you to be on this show, your response was, "Yeah, sure, I love talking about all the old junk in my basement."
So, and the garage and the storage and yeah.
So forget all the Walkmans and all that. For me, the centerpiece of your collection would be your B-Box, because I really like the idea of the B-Box and the BOS.
Yes.
So
it's a lovely piece of hardware. There's also in amidst the piles downstairs it's the developer prototype B-Box, which is, it's basically a blue shell with no bezel on the front of it. And once they shipped the actual proper case for it, you took your motherboard out of the prototype box and stuffed it into the shipping one, so they wouldn't have to send you another motherboard. So I have one of those too. The B-Box hasn't been fired up for a while. I was running a web server on it for a while as well, which was interesting. Mm-hmm. But it's a lovely, it's got Unix underpinnings and
really amazing piece of kit. Now I'll just explain the idea behind this, the whole B incorporated thing, to our listeners who might not be familiar. The story is, I think, that the day he got kicked out of Apple, Jean-Louis Gasset, he went and he founded a company of his own called B Inc., based around the idea that he realised that the macOS and DOS and, you know, the beginnings of Windows were not using the hardware they were given effectively. So he created this company, which created this whole new hardware platform and this whole new operating system called the BOS that would really... I mean, it was really amazing. You could probably watch 3 high-definition movies at the same time if you ran this thing on a modern hardware. That's really how fast it was. It was an amazingly quick operating system.
I remember seeing a demo of it, and it was probably the year escapes me, but it would have been probably the developer preview 3-4, that time period. So before they actually released the, you know, a commercial version of the operating system. And the demo that they ran, it was a pretty standard trade show demo that they did. And it was as you say, I mean, there was a fractal thing generating one corner, and there was a QuickTime movie running in another window, which was had live resizing, and then they were calculating something else in the corner, and they had email going here and a web browser, and I mean, they had so many things going on. It was hard to comprehend coming from the Mac environment, where you were lucky if you could, you know, actually run QuickTime and anything else. Mm. And it was very...
Not have it crash.
And it was very impressive. I mean, it, you know, the UI was striking. It wasn't as polished, but it was striking. It was clean. It was well-designed. It had all the Unix underpinnings. and you could dive into the command line and poke around and hack around, like we take for granted with OS X now.
Neil Stevenson, the author of Snow Crash and Cryptonomicon, had one, and I think he wrote some of his novels on a B-box.
Yeah, it's fascinating, fascinating platform, and it's nice to see the work that the folks are doing with the Haiku OS.
Yeah, I was gonna mention that.
And there's a couple folks I know that have been mucking about with that, and running.
When that goes final, I would seriously consider at least part time switching away from the Mac OS towards that.
Yeah. Morgan Aldridge is doing a little bit of work with that. The guy who's running Una now.
Right.
Yeah, so he's been playing around with that. I think he's actually committed some changes into the open source on Haiku as well, if I'm not mistaken. But he might be an interesting fellow to chat with about that.
Right. Yeah, and I was, Dan C., the home of Simple Bits, was a BOS user before he used before he switched to the Mac in about 2002. His earliest posts cover the demise of B-Ink in 2001.
Yeah, Morgan's another Newton geek, so we could talk to him about Newton stuff too.
Mm. And then you have, in addition to the B-Box, you also have a Next computer. Is it a Next Cube or a Slab one?
It's Slab. There's two. There's a Next Station, and I've got a Color Next Station as well. And again, it's one of those things where I had an opportunity. Somebody was wanting to get rid of one, and I happened to be in the right place at the right time. Another lovely, lovely operating system. Very, the hardware is beautiful and super well built, and just a joy to play with. Mm. I still like to fire up the Next Station every once in a while and just kind of see how many pieces are still existing in OS X, just maybe with a slightly different skin on them now. And the way a lot of stuff still functions, it was brilliant for its time. I think of Next Step and OpenStep and that whole platform it holds a similar place in my heart like the Newton operating system does. I mean, they share a lot of that kind of misunderstood stepchild kind of history, right? Where you either got it or you didn't get it.
Didn't.
You either understood it and appreciated it, or it's like, oh, what the heck are you spending your time on this thing for? It's fascinating to go back and kind of compare that to what we're using today.
Isn't that interesting that you get to be so well known for some of this stuff that people kind of they see you as a dumping ground for all their old stuff?
But yeah, much to the chagrin of everyone, yes.
Your significant others.
Yes. It's but again, I try not to take all of it, right? It's like you gotta filter it, you gotta kind of figure out what you want to concentrate on, and there's certain things that there's no need for them, there's no interest in them. So I'm trying to be a little more specific these days.
Yeah. Well, and you only have space for so much and time and attention for so much.
That's right. Yeah. You may see a garage sale notice on Newton Talk at some point in the near future. I need to, there's still some areas I really need to thin out.
Right. Well, look forward to that. We'll post it just in case.
Let's just get on and do the news. The big news is that Apple has announced that in the US, the iPad will ship on April the 3rd.
Hooray!
Boo!
I think my birthday is April 6th. I think Apple just contacted me and said, Dave, when would you like this to come out? And I said, well, a couple days before my birthday would be nice.
How fortuitous.
I know.
So you're getting one then, Dave?
You know, actually, I'm going to hold off. I'm going to do the same thing that I did for the iPhone and skip probably the first generation and see. I think like Grant had with the first Newton that he saw, I don't really have a use for it now. Hmm. So I'll just hold off.
Yeah. My thing, when it really came down to it, the main reason why I thought I might want one was I really think it might be the last chance that I might ever get to be, you know, one of the cool guys who has it before everybody else. Because I got my first iPod, I got it just as everybody was getting iPods. I got my iPhone just as everybody else was getting iPhones.
And see, I always seem to come late to the party. I'm always... It's never when it first comes out.
Right, me neither. But I'll tell you, I watched the Oscars last night, and they had the first iPad commercials on.
Mm-hmm.
And golly, it is just a sharp... I mean, of course, it's a demonstration of what it can do, but it looks pretty sharp.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm interested in getting my hands on one and playing with it and seeing,
yeah,
you know, something that size that you interact with the same as, you know, my iPod Touch. I mean, I have to wrap my head around that. I have to actually do it. I'm trying to, you know, other than poking at something and having it launch, I'm trying to get my head around using a multi-touch screen of that immensitude.
Do they have an Apple store up your area?
Yeah. Yeah, there's one here in Calgary. They're actually opening the second one within the next few months, too. So, I'll be there.
Right. So, the iPad ships in the US on April 3rd, despite the fact that they said at the original announcement that that would be the worldwide shipping date, that it would ship worldwide at the same time. It's going to ship to the UK, Canada, and other countries later. And so, what other news is there?
I've heard rumors that that Apple and Microsoft might be talking for their search. This sprung up a couple of weeks ago, I think.
Mm.
But apparently Steve Ballmer is making nice with Apple.
That's a kind of an interesting thing for me, because, you know, Apple and Google are very clearly treading on each other's feet now.
Right. They're a little bit more competitors.
Yeah, with the Nexus One. It started with Android, and then the Nexus One. And I mean, I don't think they'd ever get rid of Google as an option for a search provider, just because they're so huge. And I think it would be a wildly unpopular move if they did do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even a move like, hey, everybody else is moving away, like it was with the iMac dropping the floppy drive and the iPad dropping the flash. It's not like everybody else is gradually moving away from that and Apple's just the first. Like, Google is still growing all the time.
Amazingly.
Mm. So.
I think that's all the news I heard.
I lost another Apple Extended Keyboard 2 auction.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, that one I sent you about.
Oh man,
that went for that one went for even more. It went for £70. The other one went for £50. They're getting expensive.
I don't think you're meant to have this keyboard, David.
No.
you know, I happen to know somebody that has a few of those in his basement. No,
you may have a.
Which layout are they, Grant? I bet they're the Canadian one.
Yeah, it would be Canadian.
Yeah, well, I'll consider it if I get desperate. So, the supplies of MacBook Pros are running low, suggesting there might be an update soon, as I predicted a week or two ago.
Yeah, I think I made you bet on a date, didn't I?
I don't think you did, actually.
End of March? I think you said end of March.
Possibly. Well, yeah. By the end of March, I think. I mean, possibly March 12th when they start taking iPad orders.
Right.
They might do the MacBook Pro at the same time.
And we'll have our assistant listen to all the past episodes and report back. Mm.
And then my little project made a public debut this week, Published Press.
Published Press? What's this? This is news to me.
Well, Published Press, well, it started really with... back in December, I introduced a little PHP script called the Syndicator, which is very simple. It just, you fill in a form and it adds an item to an RSS feed based on what you fill in. Now, Published Press will take an RSS feed. It doesn't have to come from the Syndicator. But Published Press will take an RSS feed and it will read it out into an HTML file, which you can publish onto the web. And it's how I publish the HelloShow.net homepage for now.
Oh, neat.
So I generate the RSS feed, and then that generates the homepage.
Oh, great. Well, nice work.
Coming up shortly will be the script that powers the search field at the bottom of the page on HelloShow.net. I'm hoping to release that, but I need to make a few tweaks to the algorithm, which was hastily hacked together on 27th January, 27th January, when we debuted this podcast.
You've been busy.
Yeah.
Gosh. And I want to get something out of the way here about email format. I remember something coming up last week about this, and I forget what it was, but David, can you remind me what?
I think it was to do with CC fields, carbon copy fields. Yeah, sorry about that. Sorry about that, Grant.
Yeah. You know what? I'm very meticulous about that kind of stuff, and you know, I'm a bottom poster, not a top poster, and I thought that was pretty good. I think every once in a while, I neglect to double check the CC field, and I do move names around because you know there's a hierarchy, and you know I just caught you on a bad day.
It's my pedantry, really, but thank you for taking the effort. So, just briefly, I have some errata from previous episodes. Dave, do you remember when we were talking about transferring files between your iMac G3 and your LC? Remember that? When we were
talking
about the file systems? So, it turns out that the HFS Plus file system was introduced in macOS 8, so yours running 7.6 won't be able to read your HFS Plus formatted disks. So you'll need to format them as the old macOS standard system. And the second one is...
Well, great.
Way back in the first episode of the show, do you remember we were talking about word counting in Pages 08?
Mm-hmm.
Turns out that there is a word counter function in it.
You found it.
But if you open the inspector in Pages, then go to Document, then go to Info, then it has several metrics for word count, character count, paragraph count, etc. So...
Well, there you go.
There you go. You do not need an Apple script set up as a service in order to count words in Pages. So that's from Chris Lightfoot. So thanks to him for sending that in. And our thanks to
Chris.
David Grealish for telling us about the HFS Plus and HFS file systems.
Right. Good information. I just wasted an entire week's of work. It's fine.
I think we've all done that at some point.
Yeah, you know, it was fun. It was good time playing with my floppy to USB drive.
So, anything else we want to talk about? That's it. We've gone through all my notes.
Grant, where can people find you at?
My main website is splorp.com.
That's what I want to ask. Where did that come from?
Well, way back when I... was just figuring out how to use the microphone on my old 2SI to record system sounds. I would record a sound and then name the sound, kind of, you know, onomatopoeia style of what it sounded like.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was a funk, it would be called funk. One of the sounds I recorded was scooping a piece of lasagna out of a casserole dish, and it kind of made a splorp sound. So that was the... So splorp was an actual AIF file, a finder sound, for a couple years before I was, you know, working on the... doing some web design for the company I was with, and figured, you know, it's kind of tied. This was 1996, and it said, yeah, I should probably... Well, why don't I get a domain name? Maybe I can do something with it. What am I going to... You know, what is it going to be? Well, you know, I didn't go after something logical like granthutchinson.com or something like that. I said, hey, sport's a right. great word. I'll use that. So that's kind of where it came from.
That is a great word. Huh. And what did you assign that to in the finder?
I think it was just an alert sound for a while. Every time something went wrong.
That's great.
And
lasagna.
So I still have that sound. It was actually it actually loaded automatically on my web page for years as a background sound, and I still have it. I'll send you a link to it. It's still hosted on my site. If yeah. anybody's interested,
oh, that's great. Edit it into this show in some way.
Yeah, maybe you need some intro music or something. Maybe we can like pitch bend it and turn it into a little jingle.
Right. Or any of the technical difficulties we've had, we'll just
exactly.
put that sound.
Anytime I screw something up,
there we go. All right, well, we thank you so much again for coming on, Grant. This has been just great, just what I had hoped for.
Yeah, I'm glad we're finally able to do this.
Lots of fun.
Yep.
And thanks to you, David, for getting everything hooked up. That was smart.
You have been listening to Hello, a podcast with David Kendall, Dave Lawrence, and guest Grant Hutchinson. You can visit our website at helloshow.net. Or reach us on Twitter at Hello Podcast, or email us at podcast@helloshow.net. Tune in next time.